Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Single Player. This is my bonus companion podcast to Pixels and Polygons. I create this for my Patreon backers and Patreon supporters. So if you are hearing this, thank you. Everyone on my regular feed will actually be able to hear this. I'm going to be releasing this onto my main Pixels and Polygons feed as a way to just kind of show listeners that the Patreon page exists and some of the content that they'll be able to get if they do follow one of the paid tiers. The Patreon page that I have set up is kind of my umbrella for all the retro gaming and video gaming content that I've been kind of creating and producing and doing. It's going to be all kind of gathered there under that hub. The cool part about that is they let me release and sell digital files as well. So my 32-bit library series of books are available there digitally. Also, I'll have different like writings and original essays and articles and entries, behind-the-scenes content from creating my books, and more stuff all available for free. So you can follow that and as just a free tier backer. You don't have to pay anything. It's just a good way to kind of stay current with what I'm working on. I'll have like announcements when I do announce new things and a lot of reasons to kind of, you know, pop in there and take a look at some of the stuff that I've got posted. That being said, this show, Single Player, is a podcast that I'm doing weekly for people who are supporting the paid tiers. There's a $3 and $6 tier. They're both just monthly costs, so just a few bucks a month. And in doing so, you'll also be able to contribute to the main Pixels and Polygon show. I'll be accepting and looking for like voice clips and answering like the icebreaker questions and answering your own questions from the main episodes and including those on future episodes of Pixels and Polygons as well. Also, I'll be doing like polls and looking for kind of feedback and contributions for the new books as I create them. So it's your way to kind of be involved with what I'm working on and kind of shape the projects in the way that you kind of want to help steer and shape them towards. So I try and, you know, make as much value as I can if you're, you know, willing to support me. Like, I definitely want to make sure you get your money's worth. So take a look on the page. This podcast, the Single Player podcast, is just part of the benefits. So I appreciate y'all for considering it and taking a look at it. So that boring upfront stuff out of the way. This episode will be focused on what I call my top 10-ish. So I'll do these from time to time, and I'll make just various top 10 lists on different subjects and different topics just to kind of expand upon and share kind of my thoughts and opinions. But I call it top 10-ish because I may break that number and kind of expand it out past it for certain reasons. And I'm going to immediately break that rule for this first episode. So this is going to be my top 10-ish Nintendo 64 games. yeah, I just, it's a great system. It doesn't have that large of a library, so it was kind of simple to kind of just scroll back through and look at the list of all the games. I literally just plucked them out of the list for games that I just remember loving, and then I kind of scaled that list down even further, and then I did another pass. I had about 18 games that I put in bold font, and I decided to whittle that down to 15. So these are my top 15 games that I recommend for the Nintendo 64. I'm not saying these are the best Nintendo 64 games and that the rest of them are like bad and for any reasons whatsoever. There's plenty of great games on the Nintendo 64. This is just my top 15 games that I recommend you kind of check out, and I'll explain why. So I'll start from the bottom. I'll go from 15 all the way up to number one. I did rank them, so this is the, you know, reverse order of my thoughts and care and appreciation for these games. So 15 real quick, San Francisco Rush 2049. It's, you know, not an amazing game by any means whatsoever. It was an arcade racer that was ported to the 64, and I think Dreamcast had a version of it as well. It was a fun racer, and it was like a futuristic like a racing, like arcade game through like a future version of San Francisco. Obviously you can tell that by the title. But what I think I really liked about this game was the, like this had this like trick stunt mode. It was just like kind of like a wide open level. It was almost like a developer's like sandbox type of thing to test the physics and controls over the cars. But It was just fun to like drive around and just do like a max speed, you know, hitting a ramp to just try and like spin and flip and do crazy tricks with the car. And it was just something that my friends and I growing up would, we played for a little while and passed the controller around quite a bit and had a good time with it for a summer. So yeah, for arcade racing game fans, I don't know that you can do any better on the 64 than San Francisco Rush 2049. Next up, number 14 on my 10-ish, top 10-ish games for the Nintendo 64, Turok Dinosaur Hunter. Yes, it does look like you're wading through a bowl of pea soup. The fog of your, the visual fog that you have to how far you can see in front of you and what the game can render is severely limiting. But this was, at least I played this, I believe, pre-GoldenEye. I do remember renting it from like a Blockbuster. And I even think I went as far as like renting the game, but also buying the strategy guide. So when I didn't have the game, I was flipping through the guide and trying to like, you know, like think about the levels and remember where I was at and where I played. Ultimately, I think I did end up owning it, but it was a pretty solid, like, first-person shooter. Again, this is an era where consoles weren't really getting like quality first-person shooters. PCs definitely were the place to play them. But for someone like me who didn't have that, it was kind of fun to play that type of game. I do remember being really challenged by it, and there were some frustrating, you know, enemy designs like as like the game went on. But overall, there was some fun there, and it was just kind of a neat idea. I do also remember having some of the old Valiant, like, Turok comics as well from the 90s. So I like the idea of having, like, this comic book, like, spinoff, even though I don't know how much it really kind of stayed to the source material. But that's 14. Number 13 on my top 10-ish Nintendo 64 games, Star Wars Shadows of the Empire. This was a game that I got day one with my Nintendo 64. We had like saved up money. I think we traded in like with the Sega Genesis and was like saving up like cash to get like that next purchase, but we didn't have enough. So like my parents had the money that we saved. And then it wasn't for Christmas. It ended up being like early into the next year after launch, probably around like March or so. Like I think it was maybe like a tax return type check, like splurge thing that my parents like, you know, made up for us not being able to get one on Christmas. I do know they were kind of hard to find, so that could have been part of the reason too, but they showed up, they went out and picked it up, found it, and they showed up with Cruisin' USA, Star Wars Shadows of the Empire, and Super Mario 64. So we had a really cool day one experience, but this game was really entertaining. I wasn't a huge Star Wars fan necessarily. I think I'd seen the movies at the time. But, you know, I never really was a diehard for it, and I still am. I'm not really a diehard Star Wars fan to this day, but I do enjoy, like, that opening level of taking down the AT-ATs or AT-ATs, whatever you call them, and using like the cable to like kind of trip them up and pull them down. But then when it went into like that third person kind of action adventure game, even though it was a little clunky and a little bit, you know, kind of wonky, I do remember just really enjoying my experience with it. The level of variety because of like the gameplay, like style changes that they kind of threw you through were cool. I remember fighting like the IG-88 droid, bounty hunter droid, you know, was cool. And, you know, the idea that this was taking place in like the world of Star Wars that I was semi-familiar with was kind of neat. But that was a fun day one game and fun early Nintendo 64 game for sure. Number 12 on my top 10-ish Nintendo 64 games is Mario Kart 64. Probably don't need to really elaborate much on this one. I think the only thing that this game really lacked was, even though the visuals were, you know, definitely great at the time, I can still remember like looking back, and if you like watch some like Let's Play videos or look at the old footage of Mario Kart 64, I was like kind of disappointed that the characters were just like sprites and not like fully 3D like rendered models or anything. I mean, I know the world, you know, was and it definitely looked great at the time, but just something kind of static about the way the, you know, you always just saw like the few angles of like the animations of the carts moving, like, you know, always kind of stood out. But I did enjoy the game. It's a super fun game, and you know, multiplayer, playing against, racing against ghosts, like really trying to master tracks and shortcuts and stuff. Really fun game that I definitely recommend to Nintendo 64 owners out there for sure. Obviously, you probably already have it. Number 11 on my top 10-ish Nintendo 64 games, Winback Covert Operations. Winback was a like cover-based third-person shooter, and it had like this like red laser sight for your gun, like while aiming and everything. It was kind of neat. I mean, it was ahead of its time. I don't know if you really want to like say like was like a prototype Gears of War type of like way that you can kind of like mount up onto like walls or taking like cover from like your enemies and your surroundings and everything. But like you were able to kind of like lean against and stick to those like cover based system and then pop out and aim. And it was almost like the Resident Evil 4 aiming mechanic where you can kind of see where you're aiming and everything. But it was a really neat 3D action game. It had a little bit of a slower pace to it compared to like a run and gun game, but that was because you were wanting to make sure you got the right angle on enemies and you were taking the right cover and you were kind of making your way through it. It had a really almost like Sega arcade House of the Dead style, like cheesy story. It just looked good and played good, and it did have a multiplayer mode that, you know, you can kind of abuse some of the invincibility frames after getting shot and stuff, and it wasn't as addicting as just kind of like playing through the game for its solid mechanics. But yeah, I thought it was always rad. Me and my friends, when we were younger, played a lot of it, and I do remember when I moved away from them and moved to Southern California growing up in like junior high and everything. Once I finally got into high school, I think is when it was really actually, but there was a PS2 port of it, which I always just thought was odd. It was a Nintendo 64 game that they just, you know, remade with higher resolution, like backgrounds and updated character models, but like that same kind of snappy cover-based action gameplay. But again, wild story and just kind of a fun, entertaining action game. So if you have not played it, like, you know, I'm sure you've played Mario Kart 64, but this is one maybe you've skipped. I think it's worth kind of checking out. Maybe even trying that PS2 one. Number 10 on my top 10-ish Nintendo 64 games, Pokemon Snap. Just fun. On-rails game. It wasn't like hyper violent or anything, but it was still something that just had like lots to discover and lots to enjoy. A lot of entertaining like replay value to it, finding like the secrets of like the stages, how to lure out and capture, or, you know, lure out and photograph like certain Pokemon. And I remember post launch, there was a promotion at Blockbuster where you could bring in your cartridge and print out some of your photos. And my friends and I growing up, my brother was with us as well. We were all, you know, gosh, age 10, 11, maybe 12. And we really wanted to take advantage of that. And we like literally like stowed away and like snuck in the back of my friend's mom's car. She had an overnight job, and we just like kind of hid under like this blanket and like their truck bed. And, you know, there was just a lot of stuff back there, so no one really noticed it, but we snuck into, like the town, like where the Blockbuster was at, which was, you know, 20 something miles away from where we live. So it was not something we could like walk or anything, but we went to Blockbuster. We printed these stickers out. We had an awesome time being able to do that. And then we were stuck with like, now what do we do overnight? Like past curfew, as just like these younger kids in the middle of like this, you know, town where we knew nobody and didn't have anywhere to go. It got a little sketchy and we had some like weird people kind of heckling us and whatnot. And ultimately just kind of bailed out and found my friend's mom on her lunch break, and in an angry confrontation, she basically had to go get us a hotel room so that we could stay somewhere, and that cost her money, and I'm sure she wasn't really happy with us. But this is a super bizarre tangent on this Pokemon Snap related story. I know. I don't know if anybody else was a delinquent youth, but that definitely was a bad decision, and I'll always remember it because of the Pokemon Snap association. Number 9 on top 10-ish Nintendo 64 games of mine, Harvest Moon 64. So this was really the second game in the series. Maybe the Game Boy Harvest Moon 1 on the Game Boy may have predated this, so this could have been the third, but it took the series into like this isometric kind of like 3D, pseudo 3D kind of like top-down angle, which definitely like gave the game a facelift from the Super NES like original. But it was just a really good game that I've always been a fan of the Harvest Moon games, just like the carrot on a stick of just doing a little bit more, getting a little bit more money to invest in, you know, better crops and better items to get more money to repeat the process and go through the different seasons, and upgrade your farm and buy more animals. Like, it's a farming, like low key kind of experience, but, it's just kind of addicting to kind of stick to it and get in its loop. But the Nintendo 64 one kind of set the engine in place that ultimately would be used in the PS1 version of Harvest Moon Back to Nature, which is one of my favorite Harvest Moon games, period. So I appreciate the DNA that Harvest Moon 64 had, and we definitely enjoyed this game growing up, my friends and I. Number 8 on my top 10-ish Nintendo 64 games, Diddy Kong Racing. This was just a fun game. I do realize I have this placed above Mario Kart 64, and some people may be screaming out loud that I'm crazy, and some people may be, you know, absolutely nodding their heads in agreement of this. But I think the variety that this game offered compared to Mario Kart 64 just made it feel like it was a better value, I think, for just like, you know, kids looking to get the most out of their games. You know, there was like hover boat levels and like airplane flying levels, not just kart based levels. So for like a kart racing game, it just kind of felt cool to have those different types of vehicles to explore and play around with. Plus it had that single player adventure mode with like the boss races and everything. It was a there's a lot to do in it. You know, I think it was really fun. I remember getting in the mail, we were either subscribed to some magazines or we registered our Nintendo 64 or something, but you know, we were on the mailing list for it, but we got a VHS tape in the mail that had like a promotional, like kind of commercial and preview of the game, that I remember just being like really hyped for to get the game, you know, on release and everything. So, really fun game. If you haven't played it, there was, I think there was a DS port of it actually, but it being made by Rare, obviously it makes it a little confusing to, you know, get updated and re-released and everything now that they're owned by Microsoft. But definitely a great N64 game, so check it out. The next game on my list, number 7, is going to be Super Smash Bros. The original. It's kind of also maybe doesn't need much explaining. It's just a, like, of its era, kind of surprised fans. You know, there were fighting games on all systems and arcades. People were already highly addicted. There was already like tournaments for various fighting games, you know, but Nintendo to show up and make their own and put their own twist on it was rad to see. Just kind of iconic Nintendo characters, but also characters who became iconic. I mean, you know, Captain Falcon, you know, like bringing back like Earthbound characters and things like that, I think maybe sparked and created interest in those series that the like US or North American like players didn't quite have, because not getting all of those games and those series and franchises, like maybe players in Japan did. But it was a really, really cool, really fun, entertaining game. And I think the single player mode and like the character specific, like break the targets, that kind of like taught you to like be like skilled with your character's abilities. I think that was in the original game. That wasn't just Melee, right? Yeah. Sure. I'm gonna trust my gut. But it was just fun. It was almost like a fusion of like a party game, because you know, you could have like this pick up and play kind of feel to the game, but as you played it more and mastered it, it just got even better. Having like a four player fighting game with like multi-tiered stages and not just like basic, you know, left and right, like locked on a singular plane. Like, it was cool to be able to travel around a stage and use the environments and use items to kind of help assist in it. So having that party game feel with this Nintendo polish and charm in a highly entertaining like fighting game like engine was a cool thing to see on the Nintendo 64. Number six is Mario Tennis. I've spoke about this before. I think in the episode with one of the episodes with the Flashback 64 crew, Guy McKenna, I kind of like rambled on with my love for Mario Tennis. But the Nintendo sports games, I mean, as far back as like the NES golf game, like I just like love to death. Like they do a great job with these. And this is pre like really trying to up and level up themselves, like, you know, with the way they design their games. But this one didn't have like overly like ridiculous like special moves or like crazy like party game antics mixed in. It was really just solid like tennis like gameplay, like drop shots and lob shots and being able to kind of play like singles or doubles. But it was just really a really well balanced way to like play some competitive tennis, but like with that Mario charm. There was a really cool Mario Tennis and Mario Golf Game Boy Color game and Game Boy Advance games that came out down the road that had these like fun like adventure modes and everything with them too. So I've just loved the series since this early stages here like this, and this is a great game to go out and play if you haven't played it already. It's still competitive and super fun today. Number five on my top 10-ish N64 games, I have WCW NWO Revenge, but I also put / WWF No Mercy. I was always a WCW, you know, kid growing up when I was watching wrestling. Revenge was the game that we spent hundreds of hours playing as a kid. But as WrestleMania 2000 and No Mercy came out and the same developers got the WWF license and didn't have the WCW license anymore, like we couldn't like ignore the gameplay. Like those games, like No Mercy having breakable like tables and ladders and like, you know, the highest end version of their creator wrestler features, there were like really cool things that it was neat to see how like scaled up that could go. But Revenge was just so many brutal like matches against my friends and I growing up on, you know, who was the best, and really learning like, you know, the right balance of like defensive and like playing it safe, you know, as well as like aggressive and like counters and things like that. Like it had a really good mix in pace and design. And those games are just like fun. Those matches could go on for a minute, and the anxiousness and aggressiveness, you know, that kind of came out of my friends and I as we played through it. Was always good. At the end of the day, you know, you get over a sour loss, but they always have great memories of playing those. So if you're not a wrestling fan, you know, I don't know that I can recommend it per se, but we spent hundreds of hours playing these games, and the Nintendo 64 has some of the best wrestling games. I say that because the original PS1 SmackDown games were also like top on my list. All right, where was I at? Where did I leave off? Oh, yeah. Number four on my top 10-ish N64 games. This is also similar to the last one. It's a hybrid release. I put... This might be cheating, but it's my damn podcast, and I'll do what I want. But it's GoldenEye 007 / Perfect Dark. Obviously, there's a lot of shared DNA between those games. GoldenEye, for what it was, like I mentioned earlier with Turok, this was the game, I think, that really set a lot of players on consoles on the path of like really just falling in love with first-person shooters. And all the levels and the extra difficulties that added extra challenges, the unlockables and the cheats that you can kind of undo, plus like the multiplayer mode that was just constantly being played. Like that was something that we would never get tired of. I've shared that on here. I've shared the story about like putting tape of like taping cardboard to divide the screen to prevent us from looking at like screen lookers and everything. Like my friends and I were hardcore about playing this. We spent, I mean, beyond hundreds of hours like playing this game. And Perfect Dark, when that came out, I don't think I had the 64 anymore. I think at this point I'd already gotten my PlayStation. But luckily my best friends, you know, Austin and Thomas, they had a 64 and the expansion pack needed, obviously, to fully enjoy the game. But continuing like that multiplayer mode, you know, the Farsight through the walls and, you know, the laptop gun and like all the cool, like like even bigger and more bombastic, like gadgets and things. Super bizarre original story. Like all the single player like adventure was awesome. But more and more of that multiplayer mode and having what was like the complex, or it had a couple of like the GoldenEye levels I kind of rebrought over for multiplayer fans, but just amazing games, both fantastic and amazing games. And it was cool to see the DNA of this series even continue on in like the Time Splitters and Time Splitters 2 and that series from Free Radical. Yeah, just GoldenEye, Perfect Dark, like number four, like it's almost made the top three, but I think it should be, you know, happy and proud in the top five for my top 10-ish Nintendo 64 games. But that being said, we're in the top three now. Number three on my list. This is the last one, and again, it makes sense to do this, but The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time. Ocarina of Time? I say Ocarina a lot. I'm pretty sure it's Ocarina then. And Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask, just the two Zelda titles on Nintendo 64. While I have not actually personally finished Majora's Mask, it's just, it had a huge impact on like people who did play it and love the series. Like kind of like that darker story, like having a slightly like sadder vibe and like this more mature take on some of that, the gameplay elements that were just kind of perfected in the first release. It was neat to see. And like the time mechanic of going through the day was really cool. But Majora's Mask really took the assets and was able to like turn around a follow-up game to Ocarina of Time, and that I think potentially even surpassed what it was. But yeah, that original on Nintendo 64 was just kind of amazing. It like looking back on it, you might see like design flaws or like clear limitations and stuff, and you know, it's not truly as open and as big of a game as, you know, you maybe remember and have the nostalgia for. But at the time, it was that open and it was that big, and there were like there's a real sense of freedom, you know, to see all that happen like in 3D, the entire adventure, and you know, traveling through time and having like that storyline. It was really cool, and the super well done game, and just a memorable like classic for sure. Nintendo will obviously continue to like iterate and evolve that franchise, and you know, they never settle on one type of thing and repeat themselves. So there have been further 3D adventures, but they all kind of capture and highlight like kind of different things that make the gameplay like loop and the gameplay styling of what people want from a Legend of Zelda title. They even surprise people. Things with like Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom, I think, definitely surprise people with things they aren't asking for out of a Zelda game, but you know, once they got it, obviously they love it for a reason. But yeah, this Nintendo 64 generation for Legend of Zelda titles was a great generation to have. So two amazing games, two classic games that I'm sure are in every Nintendo 64 collector's library. If you don't, I don't know what you're collecting. Number two on my top 10-ish Nintendo 64 games, Star Fox 64. Yeah, I mean, it might be weird to have that over, you know, some of these other games like I've shared. And yeah, I don't know. Like, I just remember getting that game. And I believe I think this is another Blockbuster rental, man. I mean, Blockbuster was getting some money from me. Or not from me, but from my parents. I think they even let us rent the Rumble Pack. I want to say it also included that. But eventually, you know, I would get my own Rumble Pack and have it and everything. But that was just like a game changer for me. Like, you know, as a young gamer, like knowing what I had art experience, like you know, players having played some 3D games already. This predated my first PlayStation, so I ended up selling and trading in my Nintendo 64 and used that to help purchase and buy my first PlayStation. So I had yet to kind of experience some of the games at that time, but this still, like, the fluidness and the feel of the game, like the colors and the look of it, the stage variety, the even like the voice acting, like it's a cartridge-based game, but there's still like, you know, all the dialogue that's loaded on there, like, it was just fun, just really fun to play. And while it is more of a linear experience, and, you know, being an on-rail shooter, there isn't like a ton of freedom, except for, you know, those handful of like 3D stages. It was just, a game that, like, you know, I think you had to be there to really appreciate it. I don't know that people can go back and, you know, see anything special out of it, but this was just like a really, really well designed game. Also had some multiplayer components to it, which we did experience, you know, having the Star Fox cast like on foot with their little bazookas and everything was a little bit odd, you know, in some of those multiplayer levels. But just the look, feel, sound, and pacing of the game is awesome. I can remember playing through it. We had my brother had a bachelor party for me that, you know, my version of a bachelor party before I got married, and the hotel room at the casino that we stayed at, it was one of those like legacy, like this was 2009, I want to say, so well beyond the Nintendo 64's life. The hotel room still had like that Nintendo 64 controller built into the TV. So, being, you know, drunken and late at night, we rented, you know, the Star Fox 64 and played through and beat the entire game before, you know, trying to play something else. So, that's always a fun memory as well too. But Star Fox 64, like, just great game. It's my number two. It doesn't have to be your number two. You're going to have a different list of games. That's okay. But it is my number two. And number one, top of my top 10-ish Nintendo 64 games is obviously, you know, I haven't mentioned it yet, but you should be aware of it. Super Mario 64. This was that day one, you know, when I got my Nintendo 64, this is one of the games that we got with it. And just blew my mind. Like, being able to play it. I remember being at, what was that place called? I think it was called Incredible Universe, which was similar to like a Fry's Electronics, you know, all of which have closed down and are no longer around. But there was like they had a 64 like on display to play it like around launch. And I just remember like, you know, being able to play the game a little bit and just knowing instantly that like I had to play that and I had to have that. I was coming from a Sega Genesis and like, you know, Mortal Kombat, Chakan the Forever Man, and X-Men, and, you know, decent, you know, games, but all 2D and all side-scrolling, and being able to see, like, just that level of, like, 3D and freedom and everything for me as a young gamer was just amazing to see. I remember going back to school, and this would be a habit I would have going forward with life, but, you know, I think I just like lied and pretended I was sick, but like I had some type of like journal or something. But I remember writing in the journal like, oh, we have like 13 stars in the game so far, and, you know, blah, 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 blah. And then like later in the afternoon, like, oh, I have 38 stars, you know, in the game. And, you know, then when my brother got home from school, it was like something, you know, I had already gotten through like 50 something like stars just by myself as this young gamer. I was just nonstop playing it and was just hooked to it. All the worlds and all the levels, just like the charm that it had, the Mario's character model and all this, like the cool little like side things, like side details and little things that you can do in it, was just rad. It was just a well-polished game. Like Nintendo, you know, they just know what they're doing. Like that's why they continue to do it. And that's why they're some of the, you know, one of the best at what they do. But that game just kind of like just changed things for a lot of people and changed things for just games period. You know, that early look at 3D was just amazing to kind of be a part of it. So definitely a game that has always lasted as one of my top favorite games. I would say not even just top 10-ish Nintendo 64 games, but this is a game that I would probably put on my top five games of all time. If not in the top five, like, you know, by maybe trying to re-rank some more modern experiences into that, it for sure is in my top 10. Just all time, all systems, all everything. Super Mario 64. Rad. All right. That's what I got for you. Thanks for listening to me ramble on and share with you my reverse ranked list of top 10-ish Nintendo 64 games. Again, like I said, I'm going to release this one out into the main Pixels and Polygons feed. So if you've listened to it this long and you've enjoyed it, you can get more of these weekly, not just top 10-ish things. Last week I did a ranker episode where I personally ranked the entire like Metal Gear Solid series of games and kind of talked about those. But the first episode, I just talked about my love of Final Fantasy VII, like, you know, where I was when I first got it, what that, you know, kind of exposure did to me, just some memories and things that were kind of tied up with it, and just some fun details about just being there in 97 when that game was released. So these will all have like a different, you know, different focus and different feel. There isn't a specific structure like I have with the main show for these episodes. So I'll be doing these weekly, and you can listen to them for as little as $3 a month on my Patreon page. So you can find links to that in the show notes below here. And I hope you like it. And if not, at the very minimum, follow along to the Patreon page for free and get all the different like writing and behind the scenes stuff I talked about at the beginning of the show. You can see all that stuff there. So there's plenty of things to enjoy and get for $0 and zero investment. Just kind of follow along there. But that's well, I'll kind of keep all of my writing and game related kind of announcements and news and updates. So thanks everyone. Have a great evening, day, night, whatever time you're listening to this is, and I will see you next week.